Good morning. It's time for the Ship Report, the show about all things maritime. I'm Joanne Rideout. It is Friday, December 8th, 2017, and we have a dozen vessels on today's Columbia River ship schedule. In our marine weather forecast, we have east winds 10 to 15 knots, easing to 5 to 10 knots later on. Wind waves from the east, 3 feet high at about 4 seconds between wave crests, and west swells 4 feet high at 13 seconds apart. So we do have those east wind waves and the westerly swells. There could be some confused seas out there as things get a little bit sloppy. You know, if you sort of put your hand in take a bathtub or a tub of water and you slosh your hand back and forth, you're essentially creating conflicting energy in that body of water. And eventually things will start to get kind of choppy out there and the waves will seem to be coming from no particular direction at all or every direction at once. And today we'll talk more about tides and about something called an amphidromic point, something brought up in Jonathan White's book, Tides, that I was reading yesterday. And it describes places on the globe where, for various reasons, there are no tides. The tides just never go up and down. So we'll talk about that in just a minute. But first, a look at today's Columbia River ship schedule. We have two inbounders, we have 4 in the Astoria Anchorage, and we have 6 outbounders heading downriver and out to sea. Our first arrival in the river is the Grand Mercury, arriving from Japan. She's headed for Portland. She's a car carrier with brand new Toyotas on board. She'll pass Astoria around 8:30 a.m. You might see her in Portland by about 2:30 p.m. at the Port of Portland. The Daria Topti is arriving from San Francisco. She's headed for Vancouver's Anchorage, and she is going to pick up bentonite clay. She'll pass Astoria around 9:30 a.m. She'll arrive in Vancouver at about 3:30 p.m. And I always like to say, of course, that bentonite clay is kitty litter because it's very fun to say, but I didn't want to be kind of like a broken record about that. So I looked up some of the other uses of bentonite clay, and I thought I would share it with you. It's quite a useful commodity. Among its many uses are that it's used in drilling, drilling wells of different kinds, because it has the ability to lubricate and cool the cutting tools. It's used as a binder in foundry sand and iron production. It's used for decolorizing and clarifying wine, liquor, cider, beer, mead, and vinegar. So the next time you pick up a beautiful bottle of wine and, you know, it has no sediment in it, you might be able to thank bentonite clay for that. Bentonite clay isn't used as an absorbent. That's why it makes good kitty litter. It can pull liquids out of things and hold on to them. It's used to absorb oils and grease. If you ever have a spill oil on your garage floor, you might just dump some kitty litter on it and leave it there for a while. It will tend to pull that oil up from the ground and pull it away. It's also used as a bulk laxative, and it's also, I was reading about it as a thing almost like Epsom salts, where you could use it to pull toxins out of your body. So in alternative health websites, you'll see bentonite clay being used for that. In farming, it can be used as a soil amendment, and in pottery making, it can be used to make the clay more elastic. So there you go, the very versatile bentonite clay, and some of that will be coming out of the river on a ship very soon. One of them that's coming in today to pick it up. In the Astoria Anchorage, we have the Aurelia. She's headed for Longview to pick up wheat at about 2 a.m. That would put her in Longview about 3.5 hours later. The KM London is awaiting orders in the Astoria Anchorage, along with the Po Yang and the Jacilla Oldendorf. In our outbounders, we have the articulated tug and barge rig, the Sound Reliance. She's a Crowley-owned vessel, Crowley Maritime. She's leaving Portland, probably came in with refined petroleum on board. She left about 2 a.m. That would put her past Astoria. Oh, gosh, maybe about 8:30 this morning she might have glided by the downtown waterfront. Glorious Hope is heading out of Longview today with wheat on board at about 3 p.m. That would put her past Astoria about 6:30 p.m. The Glovis Chorus is leaving Portland around 6 p.m. She's a car carrier with Hyundais on board, and she probably will pass Astoria around midnight. The Eleni is leaving the Vancouver Anchorage. I think she might have wheat on board, leaving around midnight, passing Astoria, and then at about 6 a.m. on Saturday. The Oak Bay is heading out of Longview with Petcoke on board, leaving around midnight. That would put her Past that story, maybe around 3:30 in the morning if you're up early or very late. Depending on how you look at it, you might see her running lights gliding by the downtown waterfront. The Ocean Tianbo is heading out of Vancouver's Anchorage. She's leaving around midnight and maybe passing Astoria outbound around 6 a.m. on Saturday morning. Well, you know that I get really geeky about this maritime stuff that I enjoy so much. And so I've been really on the trail of tides this week, thanks to a listener question from one of our volunteers. And when I was looking at that very interesting book I was reading about tides, in Jonathan White's book called Tides, he was talking about tidal extremes, you know, like the Bay of Fundy in Canada, where there are 50-foot tides. But there are some places on the Earth where there just are no tides at all. And, you know, you might say if you live near a lake or a very placid river, you might think there are no tides, but there are tidal effects there. But they're actually, they just may be so small that you wouldn't notice them. But there are truly places in the world where there are no tides. And so I looked this up and I found a website from the University of Southampton in England talking about something called amphidromic points. They are places on the Earth where forces kind of cancel one another out, tidal forces, and the net effect is that there is no tidal change. So let me read you a little bit from this, these pages that I found. It's an article all about these amphidromic points. The presence of continents, coastlines, and the uneven shape of Earth determine the tides as we observe them in real life. To understand how that works, let's start with a big closed basin surrounded by continents. Picture the North Atlantic, but completely surrounded by land. In this case, water cannot freely bulge and follow the moon's track, which is really what the water is trying to do. It's trying to follow the pull of the moon as the Earth rotates through it. Water will try to swell in a similar fashion as it undergoes the same physics. So as Europe rotates toward the moon's position, where gravity pull becomes larger, the water will start accumulating towards the European continent. Then, as the rest of the basin and the American continent follow towards the region of maximum pull, water will switch sides and accumulate towards America. Hence, water will propagate from one side to the other as a large, long, sloshing wave. In a similar way as filling a box with water and rocking it from side to side, water will generate high and low tides by the sides, but the center will remain at the same water height. We call that a node, which are regions that act as a swelling axis. In that case, a, quote, big box would allow for a big slosh, whereas a small one would have a smaller swell. And that is why the Mediterranean Sea has very small tides. So that's not everything in this equation. We still haven't thrown in the effects of rotation, the Coriolis effect. As water is sloshing from side to side across these big open areas of ocean, sloshing slowly, but essentially it is a slosh, it's flowing and therefore being deflected by the Coriolis effect as the Earth spins. So imagine a high tide in Europe that is propagating towards America. The deflection is towards the right, northwards. In the opposite case, when flowing from America to the European continent, the deflection towards the right would be southwards. So you end up with sort of a spinning, sloshing situation that in some cases creates a place where there is sort of a center point where there are no tides. And there are certain areas in the world where there, because of the combination of all of these complex effects, the net effect is that there are no tides. So very interesting. I mean, this is, so if you're interested in this like I am, I'd just say get a copy of his book, Jonathan White's book, Tides, and read it. It's a really interesting read. And so many complicated forces going in to make what we see every day happening here. The tides, which are pretty regular, they seem to follow a pattern. They can be predicted in tide tables. But basically, there are lots of complex forces acting out there, and we probably don't completely understand any of them in totality. You've been listening to The Ship Report, the show about all things maritime. I'm Joanne Rideout. Thanks for listening, and have a great weekend.